Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Sober through the grace of God in AA. It's the 10th of December, 1967. For that, I'm very grateful. It's been a while since I've done anything formal with our region and general service district. I got sober, as I say, in 1967 in St. Paul, Minnesota. Met my sponsor at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was to be my sponsor for the next 43 years. And he was a powerful, ordinary, wonderful man. He was a mailman. He did more 12-step work in the Uptown group of Alcoholics Anonymous than any other individual in a very large group. And I got to be his wingman, and I got to follow him around and do the things that my sponsor did. And almost every experience I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous started with the foundation that I got from Warren. He just brought me along, and his wife sponsored Linda, my wife, who's smart enough not to be here this morning. And she's enjoying the company of some old Al-Anon friends, and they're having lunch together and doing all that. I didn't really know what the subject would entail. We sit here, having been victims or people who have one of the most devastating diseases that there is in the world. Alcoholism and drug dependency is an epidemic. We're seeing our children devastated at every level today. Our society is somewhat being torn apart, I think, by some of these very serious problems. They say 1 in 7 people who drink have alcoholism. You know, so we're, you know, if that's true, if half the population drinks, we have 150, you know, made of 20 million alcoholics. How many people get help? Very few. How many people who get help get recovery? Not as many as we would like in that process. But I think those of us, without being over-congratulatory about ourselves, think that in any number, it seems like we're the God-given, we're under the grace have been given to be the givers and the continuers of the recovery program that's been so graciously given to us. I mean, and the recovery is not just abstinence, which almost all of us, when we came to Alcoholics Anonymous or NA or whatever 12-step group that we come into, I think we thought recovery was 90% about abstinence. You run into people who say, oh, you've been sober 25 years. You still go? Why? Why? Do you have a half an hour? I would. Would you like to talk to my wife, or my employer, or my sponsor? You know, they'd very, very gladly explain why. I got very active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the result of that, slower than I'd like to, my life changed. The alteration in Alcoholics Anonymous is not just an improvement; it is a transformation. It is not. It takes you to a place that you never really thought you would go. It takes you to a place, I think, for most of us that we've been always trying to get to without knowing that we've been trying to get to. There's an opportunity to find your true self, to find your mission, to find who you're supposed to be in the orchestra of life. Most of us never were playing. We were not playing our instrument by the time we got to AA. It was still in the box with the ribbon on it under the piano. We never got a chance to discover that. My early service was group service. I got to do a lot of 12-step work. I got to, you know, I learned how to give an AA talk by talking mostly at treatment centers. I never talked at our group for the first 25 years because we only had one open meeting, and that we asked outside people to talk at that meeting. But I talked at prisons and treatment facilities, and then we talked at other groups. And it was just a great thing. Around the time I'm 5 or 6 years sober, I was panel 29 as a delegate for Area 26 in St. Paul. In those days, there's been a lot of changes. In those days, we had rotation. St. Paul got the opportunity to have a delegate only every 8 years. I helped change that. Myself and a few other people changed that because rotation is too automatic and is too structured, and it really isn't part of the spirit. Rotation is a wonderful principle in our service structure. But we had, you could only, you know, it went from the Twin Cities to the farming area. You went from St. Paul to the farming area to Minneapolis to the farming area. So if you were, you know, you only had a chance to run for delegate, that was not meant to be. That was not, that was an aberration of what, But Joe Ward got sober in 1947, was panel 13, and he got Warren to get involved, and Warren was panel 21. And when Warren got to be delegate in 1971, I got my first in-depth exposure to the general service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. We can look around this room and we can see that service is not as interesting as we would like it to be. In some extent, is more separate than we would like it to be. I think there's going to be some changes in that, and I hope so, because it really needs to be integrated. I think it is important that as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, we know about our history. As a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, we know about the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. And not just for knowing the structure. When I first talked to Joe Ward, when I asked him who's supposed to be involved in general service, Joe made it sound to me, and then so did another guy by the name of Mac Cheater from Winnipeg. He said, in my opinion, service is for those people who are interested in Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. And it takes a while. I don't think brand new people are interested in it, nor do I think brand new people are supposed to be building their foundation. Most brand new people don't, if they get active, they get active because they were told to get active, and they can learn that over a period of time. All of us in this room who have recovered from this devastating disease of alcoholism have a deep respect and awe of our recovery program, of the efficacy of the 12 steps, of the transformational aspect of those 12 steps. Equally as important, we wouldn't be here today if we didn't have the 12 traditions. I mean, we would have torn ourselves apart. I mean, you don't have to be at too many business meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous or active in too many service functions with the rugged personalities, with the spring-loadedness that we are, head first, 60 miles an hour, no helmet, you know, approach to living life. And when most of us get to a business meeting or a service meeting, it's hard until you mature a little bit, because most of us care so much about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, our involvement with the ideas are really emotionally based. So when we get up to a microphone, you can just kind of hear sometimes the energy of a person who hasn't maybe been at a microphone in a service function, number one. And number two, what they say they think is going to have something to do with the salvation of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the older I get, in my service as a delegate was really profound. When we talk about our regional, our region, but with regional forums, with Dr. Jack, I got to serve with Dr. Jack. I got to serve with Bob Pearson, who I think one of the greatest elements, their contributions to the service structure were the regional forums, bringing the New York office, bringing our employees, bringing our service people into so that people get a sense of what it is. I really think, and Terry L. is talking about doing it at the Cornhusker, that we really need some informative. When we have some of the people from the office, the tendency is to give an AA talk, and I hope we get to a point where we get someone who gives almost a presentation. Because I think it would be a fascinating presentation to have an hour on what the General Service Office does and what's happening and where our money goes and what and the publishing and all the different things that we do. But equally as profound as the recovery program that we have, maybe not equally as profound because without the recovery program we would have nothing else, so that's the platform of it. The inspired genius of Bill Wilson in the 12 traditions, and in the general service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe, without question, we would have... Where am I?
You're fine.
No, how many minutes am I?
12 more.
What?
12 more.
12 more? My name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to... I was kind of panicked. I thought we had 15 minutes, and I thought I was done. Equally as profound as our recovery program are the traditions and is our general service structure. Without that structure, we wouldn't be here today, period. What that structure needs to be vital is you. What that structure needs to be vital, now if all of us in Alcoholics Anonymous were active in general service, I think we'd destroy Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean that. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know what the number is, and who's supposed to, and who are supposed to be the chosen people to bring that contribution. But it's vital. So let's pick a number. Let's pick 5 to 10% of the people who are in recovery would be open to getting the call to serve Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. A lot of that seems boring. A lot of that doesn't seem to have the pithiness of recovery when we're at a recovery meeting. But our role in the general service structure is to bring the grassroots of Alcoholics Anonymous, to bring the common sense. There is not one of the great strengths of Alcoholics Anonymous is that we have a profoundly spiritual program coupled with common sense. We have a BS meter that is second to none. We don't care what you believe. We don't care a lot about what you think. But we value your experience. And when you share that experience, it has a validity and a strength because it's part of your life. So we are people who, at our best, you know, and I want to bring kind of all over the map. We don't use the traditions like we use the steps. You would never hear, in all my years, I don't think I've ever heard an argument about a step. Because we so respect the spiritual depth of the steps, none of us have the arrogance to say that we really understand in completeness what a step contains. But we argue about the traditions all the time. You broke a tradition. You know, well, what if we did that with the steps? You broke a step. I mean, you bought it. You know, you bought a damn car and you haven't completed your ninth step yet. I mean, what, the, you know, I mean, we would be checking on, I mean, we would kill Alcoholics Anonymous. So I just want to bring up the fact that we have a tendency to use the traditions and reduce them to laws and rules rather than the dynamic principles that they are that serve our fellowship. And that's a mistake. The other thing we need to do is bring our recovery to service. We need to have the same respect for each other in service context and in service meetings. We pride ourselves in being able to fight in service. We should change that. We should train ourselves to respect, to value respecting each other, and have the same kindness and acceptance of each other in service that we have in a recovery meeting. But if we don't have a vital enough participation of the average membership of Alcoholics Anonymous, our fellowship is going to end up being skewed and reduced. We're going to have too much New York in it. I'm a great admirer of our General Service Office. But if they are, if they were relegated to make all the decisions from their own point of view, we would not have as balanced a point of view as we would have if we had people from the Midwest and we had people. When I was a delegate in the West Central region, we had Northern Michigan. I think we had Indiana and we had Missouri. No, Carl? I think, and I think Northern Michigan, because we had Ginny Hallman, who was, I might be a little bit wrong on that, and then we reduced it. We used to be a larger region. Carl and I were delegates together, to my great pleasure and respect. Carl went on to be a trustee. So in the structure, with a trustee like a regional trustee, the great purpose of the regional trustees and the delegates are to go to a conference and represent the common view of Alcoholics Anonymous. They aren't the Pharisees of Alcoholics Anonymous. They aren't the lawyers of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're the contribution of our region and our area and our groups to bring our experience to the conference, to have some understanding of how we feel about things. And when we get into a conversation, but be affected by the conversation, not to be instructed, to be there to be influenced by our structure. And as a result of our structure and a result of our traditions, Alcoholics Anonymous is thriving today. I know of other 12-step, other decisions, and some variants from what we would say the traditions with respect to property and with respect to rotation. I mean, without rotation, I think we wouldn't be alive today. We would have had a small group of people that held on to too long to the power and to the control and to the influence because they thought they were too important. Bill Wilson, who people say, you know, if Dr. Bob founded AA, it'd still be in Akron. If Bill founded it, he would have franchised it or sold it. Bill Wilson sacrificed his life for Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill Wilson, from the moment he had a spiritual experience, when he worked with those 75 people in the next 6 months and no one got sober, when he was offered the doctorate at Yale and turned it down, when he was offered the front page of the Time magazine and turned it down, this was a man who time and time again reduced his own ego and sacrificed. He would simply said yes. He simply said yes. And because of his saying yes and because of his insight, I like what Dr. Bob said, Bill was a man who could see further down the road than anybody else I knew. The battles that he really fought for the majority of the board of AA, you know, in the early 60s, going from a majority of non-alcoholics of 14 to 7 to going from a majority of alcoholics from 14 alcoholics to 7, his insight was piercing. And I believe his insight into service and his insight into the traditions were every bit as God-given and God-inspired as his insights in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But those don't work if they don't have the grassroots, if they don't have the grounding of the average member of Alcoholics Anonymous to balance the equation. It is not supposed to be dominated by our professional, wonderful General Service Office in New York. It is not supposed to be dominated by a group of people who have been long the leaders in General Service. It's supposed to be participated in by all of us to bring our experience, strength, and hope in that process. And it is in the because it's in the collective consciousness. Every room we walk into with a group of people like this has a collective consciousness. As a group, we're more wise. As a group, we're more balanced. As a group, we're more open. We are less, our individual egos do not have the presence when we're in a group. We're at our best when we're in a group. There's something about, because there's a shared consciousness. And that gets best shared in our fellowship and in our structure through the General Service structure. So I would encourage all of us to have that experience. It is not to be missed. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Our next speaker is Tom C. from Iowa. Tom.
Well, hello. My name is Tom Hay, and I am an alcoholic. Woo, boy, I had a little too much coffee this morning. I can tell you that I am very humbled, and I'm very grateful to be here today. I tell you, when we got here Wednesday, a buddy of mine, he works down in the gym. He was down in the media and press room, and we got to hang out there for a few minutes. He goes, I want you to watch something. And it was right in that main entrance as you come in, and that great big sign that says, welcome. He said, watch this. People walk in, and as soon as they saw that sign, they would just go. It's just absolutely amazing. Some people were crying, and it was it warms your heart to see this program that has helped so many people. It was a cool experience. I tell you, in the new issue of The Grapevine, it's in the international issue this month, there was a line in one of the stories that said, you know, that they felt significant yet insignificant. And I get that. I don't know if you've had a chance to meet our Andrew. He is our regional trustee, and he's on the Grapevine board. And if you don't have a grapevine, go get one. You can pay me later, Andrew. Yeah. And it's funny, when Andrew asked me to speak, he was just talking about this, I was like, getting sober in the West Central region, you know, I was like, when I got sober, I didn't know what a West Central region was. I, you know, it, But today I can tell you that I am very grateful to be here. I don't know how I ended up here. I am the current delegate for Iowa, which is Area 24. And I don't say that to impress you. I say that to talk about the power of the service structure in Area 24 and the West Central region, their commitment to service. And the, I tell you, the camaraderie is just crazy. It's been a wonderful experience. And what I have learned is my sponsor has instilled in me a sense of duty. You know, I have to give back to what was given to me. And I try to do that. I tell you, the first meeting that I went to back in 1989, I walk into this meeting. It was, you could smoke in meetings then. And I walked in, and it was a bunch of old white dudes. And there was nobody in there that looked like me. And this guy says, "If you want what we got, then do what we do." And I thought, "Hell no. I don't want anything that you got." And I left. And I tell you, I did want what they had. I just didn't know it. I didn't know it at the time. You know, fast forward. I got sober in 2006. Fast forward 15, 16 years. When it talks about being beaten into a sense of reasonableness, that was me. You know, I've been shot, stabbed, imprisoned, state, federal prison, through treatment 12, 13 times. And I can tell you, and it wasn't until the last time I was in treatment. I love treatment. You know, I got to rest. It was a good time to rest and get ready to do it again. But the last guy that I met, he was in the program, and he gave me this guy's number. He says, "I want you to call this guy." And I tell you, at that point, I was willing to do absolutely anything. When I got out, I called him, and he was the GSR of our home group in Des Moines, Iowa. Three Legacies. We meet at 6 and 8. If you're ever in Des Moines, make it over there. I tell you what, that group's commitment to service has been a blessing. But what happened was, I think I was maybe 3 months, 4 months sober at the time. He was a GSR, and he did not want to go to conferences. Friday night, there was a conference in Dubuque, Iowa, which is about 3.5, 4 hours. Friday night, I get a phone call. He says, "Tom, you need to be in Dubuque tomorrow morning." And I'm like, "Oh, man." So I get up at 3 or 4 in the morning, and I drive over there, and I know nothing. Like I said, I'm maybe 3, 4 months sober. And I walk in there, and it's like they're speaking Greek. I don't know a word. Anything. But what happened was, there was a bunch of guys that said, "Hey, come here, come over here and sit with us." And it kind of freaked me out at first, because I was like, what do these guys want? And I can tell you, as this thing's going on, these men are basically service sponsoring me. You know, I'm trying to write down all the notes and write down everything. He's like, "Don't write that down. That's stupid. You don't need that. Write that down. That's important." He's like, "Ah, screw that." And so it was quite the experience. And I learned so much. In fact, you know, I love these guys. I get a text from him a couple days ago when we got here. And he says, "I want you to take lots of notes, because there's going to be a quiz when you get back." I said, all right, brother. I will do that, you know. And the same thing happened when I went to my first West Central Regional Service Conference. I didn't know anything what was going on. But what I tell you, what I did see is when I walked in the door, I saw a lot of happy, smiling people. And I wanted what they had. I didn't know what it was, but I knew I wanted what they had. And people have just, you know, grabbed on to me and have helped me work through this path that I'm on. You know, all positions in service are important. I started out making coffee and shaking hands. And like I said, I don't know how I ended up here, but the camaraderie that of the people that I've met, people like Libby and Andrew and Lisa and all the other the other delegates and the past delegates and everybody that has just been, everybody I've talked to, I've learned something from them. Hands down, I can learn something from every single person. And that happiness and that smiling, it's infectious. You know, it is infectious. The guys that I sponsor, I don't tell them to go do anything. I just do it, and they get to experience it and see it. And that's what happened. No one told me that I had to do something. It's just I saw this people like you, and that was attractive. That was so attractive compared to the way I was living. I did not know how to live. I can tell you, through service work, at the time I was the PI for our district. And this other lady ran for CPC, and in Des Moines, our committees get to work together, close together. And so I ended up marrying this woman. So I get the lovely Jill, my wife. It's just been a blessing. This path that we've been on has just been, it's been wonderful. You know, I've just kept throwing my hat in the ring, and things just kept happening. And I don't know what the plan for me is. You know, I can tell you when I was elected alternate delegate, a man came up to me and says, you need to call me. And it kind of freaked me out. It's like, what did I do now? But it was, again, it was one of them situations, you know, where, for the service sponsorship. He gave me his number, and he was a past delegate. And like I said, I was kind of intimidated by him. But what he did was he showed me what he did. And how he stayed sober and worked through this thing, you know, and I just wanted what he's got, you know. I changed sponsors, and this guy has just been a blessing. Just texted me right before I came up here. He said, just tell him about the duty. Tell him about your duty and speak from the heart. And that's what I've done, you know. I've got some notes I've been trying to. Every time I do these things, it's like, man, I should have said that. So I wrote a couple notes. You know, I believe, like Bob was talking about, the service sponsorship, you know, is just totally underutilized. It has so much enhanced my sobriety and my sense of duty, and I think the West Central region does just an incredible job of that. You know, there's so many. If you look around this room, I can say I've met and know most of the people in this room. That's just it's a wonderful feeling. You know, like anything, you get some bleeding deacons, and you get people that are elder statesmen. And for the most part, most of the people in the West Central are just that. You know, and they're just here to help keep this thing alive for another 80 years, you know? Because I've got to tell you what, I have got a 19-year-old daughter, and she acts a lot like me. And I want this thing to be around for her. I don't know that she's ever drank, but it has changed my life. And like Bob was saying, coming into this service structure, and as particularly as serving as the delegate now, it has changed the way I look at alcoholics. Now, when I'm in my home group and when I was just working the steps, I was concerned with me and how do I stay sober. But going through like the conference and some other things, it has opened my eyes, and I've gotten to look at this thing in a bigger picture. You know, as a small part of a great whole, and how do we continue to keep this thing around? It's funny, when I was there in New York this year, Mary Claire said, "You seem really calm," and I said, "I tell you what, it's because of the process that I've been through in Area 24 and the West Central region, the way they prepare their people and the service." And by the time I got there, there was a sense of calmness, I was at peace. It's because of the people around me. It wasn't because of me. It was because of my higher power and the way they prepare us. And I was so grateful to be, you know, to go through that. I have been shown nothing but love. I don't know how am I doing on time?
8 minutes.
8 minutes. Hi, I'm Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And I don't know where I want to go with this at this point. Like I said, I'm grateful to be here, and I think I'm going to end with that because I'm going to start rambling, and I don't want to do that. So, thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Our third panelist is Libby L. from Montana.
So my name's Libby. I'm an alcoholic. I am currently the Panel 65 delegate from Area 40, Montana. Woohoo! Great job, guys. Thanks for this. Now we have a half hour, 45 minutes, right? Not really. So thank you for asking me to join everyone here, and that's what I thought, you know. Big room with a small crowd, so that I like that kind of thing. My sobriety date is March 25th, 2000. So my friend Mary and I, who's here with me today, are the class of zero. And it makes it really easy to do the math. And so, you know, and that's exactly what I intended when I got sober, right? To have that sobriety date. Also, like Tom was saying about, you know, West Central Region, you know, what the heck does that mean? And when I got here, that had no meaning whatsoever. And as I've gone through my life and, you know, as I've gone through my sobriety now and thinking about things, it's just my life has transpired in the West Central Region. So I was born to be a part of the West Central Regional AA Service Conference. I was born in Iowa, northwest Iowa, where the tall corn grows. You know, just a pretty normal Midwestern kind of person. I did not live on the farm, but I you know, was surrounded by them for sure. And when I was little, I had a lot of those messages in my head and from the outside. I have three older siblings. I was the fourth of five children, and my dad was 22 when I was born. So, I didn't even think about that till I got sober. That didn't dawn on me that, you know, they were just bad parents. No, they were busy parents. You know, those messages that I used to get, you know, you're slow, you're dumb, you're a nuisance, nobody wants you around. Those old ideas that play in my head, well, those are my children of the corn messages. And so that's what I call them now, and I try to stop listening to those. You know, I grew up in Iowa, and I always wanted to be from somewhere way more exciting than that. But now I like it because I've met some other cool Iowans, and we're all cool now. But you know, I grew up feeling different, like everyone else. But also, you know, I had crooked teeth, thick glasses. I had a crooked spine. I have scoliosis. So when I was about in sixth grade, I had to start wearing this back brace that was really noticeable. And so I was, you know, I just hated it. And so, and then I started moving around a lot. So that was a lot of fun to be this geeky, nerdy, crooked girl. And then it turns out I have a crooked head, too. And so I was just doomed from the start. Special case. But thankfully, I, you know, grew out of the brace. I got braces. I had LASIK surgery. And I have Alcoholics Anonymous. So all that crookedness is, you know, I keep a few kinks every now and then, but to keep it more exciting that way. But, yeah, my parents are from Nebraska. I spent a lot of time there. I was just at a family reunion there. They moved to Wyoming when I was in college. I spent some time there, summer internships. My sister and brother live in Minnesota. My brother works in North Dakota. It's just everything that, you know, this whole... I know the West Central region very, very well. I drove through almost all of it to get to the airport to come to Atlanta. And the other thing that really qualifies me to know about this region is that I have been drunk in every single one of those states as well. And so that is like the best qualifier. We can add all the Western states, Alaska, Hawaii, Canada, and Mexico, but every single one of those West Central ones as well. And so, you know, my drunkalogue really isn't all that exciting, but to me, the drunkalogue is kind of the first step, you know, how I was powerless over alcohol, how you can, you know, look at me today and believe that I belong here, because, you know, if you didn't know what I used to do, you'd say, oh, she might not belong here, until you listen to me for about 2 minutes. And then, you know, that my life was unmanageable, and that's what brought me there. And thank goodness now I still believe that my life is unmanageable. So it's how that second part of the first step has changed for me, is that my life is unmanageable. It's unmanageable by me, and it's supposed to be unmanageable by me. So I have this higher power now that manages my life and is doing a pretty good job at it. I'm also convinced that I'm the only one up here that's having hot flashes, so I'm that's pretty unmanageable as well. Though there are medications for that. But you know, doing the work of the steps has brought me to that place, and doing the work of service has brought me to that place. There's a part in when I looked it up in the online, it said it was in How It Works, but I was trying to find it in the book earlier, so I'm not even sure where it is. But there's a part in the book that says that after we're doing all this work, after all we're doing that stuff, is that we have swallowed and digested large chunks of truth about ourselves. And what that reminds me of is that I was a puker. And so nobody really liked to party with me that much. So I was a puker and a baller, and you know, it's like, so I had to, you know, work on being an alcoholic. And one of the things that as I looked back on my life, you know, as being an alcoholic was, I went to college in South Dakota, my first college career. I went to pharmacy school. I'm a pharmacist, so as you can guess, I have problems other than alcohol. And because I have to work on drinking, you know, that was the easier, softer way. But we went out, and, you know, I puked on seven of my friends, kind of like all at once. And so that's pretty talents that I have. And then I was, you know, relegated to the back of her car, and the next morning I was cleaning up her car, and this is pretty gross, but this is what the book reminded me of. And I'm cleaning this mess up, and I'm not thinking to myself, you know, maybe I should drink less. Maybe I should do less of this stuff that happens here. I was thinking, I really need to chew my food better, because there were large chunks that I hadn't digested. So I think, hopefully this was after breakfast for you guys, but, you know, and, sorry, this isn't about service so much. We'll move on. We'll try to make it relate. But, you know, and a lot of us talk about the drugs we used to do to drink more, or the drugs we used to do somewhat in a very brief time. And like I said, I'm still a pharmacist. I don't work as one anymore, but, I did at the end, that was the stuff I was doing, but in the drug that I used to drink more was Maalox. So, you know, sometimes I think that I relate to Dr. Bob, but he drank to calm his stomach. You know, I drank and my stomach went the other way. But and this was before the days of Pepcid and Tagamet that you could get. So I'd swig Maalox so I could go out and drink, you know. And that may not sound all that, it's not as exciting as cocaine and meth and all that. But what I realized later on was that, you know, I did that stone cold sober. So I could drink, I did that. I couldn't have done it. And drinking was that important so that I would take those steps to do that. And so those are the things that helped convince me that I'm an alcoholic and I'm in the right place. The things in my life that brought me to our doors were, you know, pretty much the regular stuff that happens to everybody. I forgot to start my timer, so I have no idea what time I'm at. So
10 more minutes.
My name's Libby. I'm an alcoholic. So did some more moves around. Went to college in South Dakota, like I said. Went to California. Met a guy from Montana who actually was a friend of my brother's when I lived in Montana. Moved back to Montana. Had two kids. Live out in the country with a creek that runs through the property in Kalispell, Montana, which is right next to Glacier National Park. One boy, one girl. The perfect little scenario. Great job. Nice car. No dog yet, but, you know, the whole picket fence kind of world and still had that complete inability to be happy. And so I got to the end of everything and decided that I needed help. I couldn't live like this anymore. And I was tired of hating you for being happy. So I went to treatment, and I love treatment too. While I was in treatment, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God. My first service position was the pink can. I got that service position because I didn't want to go home yet. You know, I wasn't ready to go home that night. We had that business meeting. And so I stuck around, and they needed somebody to do the pink can, and so I said, yeah, I'll do that. So what that pink can did was get you to know me, but also what it did is that my kids were little. They were 4 and 8, and my husband's not in the program, didn't know anything was even going on because those problems, other than alcohol, are pretty easy to hide sometimes. Nobody really quite understood what was going on, what I needed to do, and I didn't even know what it did. I didn't even know what I was, and so it gave me permission to go to those meetings and gave me a reason to go to those meetings and be there because I was supposed to. And he could understand that better than just me needing to go to a meeting. If you had a responsibility, you had to show up for it. And so that was my first service experience. And then through the years now, when I go and I'll tell him, well, it's a business meeting or it's an election meeting. And I come home and he says, well, what are you now? And now I'm the president. So that's kind of the only way he'll understand it. You know, but don't let him read the daily reflections that says there is no president of AA. And then I went to my first service conference, a little under a year sober, and like Tom or somebody was saying, you know, it was just like very confusing. All these alphabet, all these letters, all these things. I sat next to a guy from my home group. I think he was the GSR or the DCM, I don't remember. He'd tell me what these things were. Panel what? CPC? PI? PCP, I don't know what you're talking about. And then all these other things, and he explained it all to me. He got a service manual, the pictures, and then somebody would say something else. I'd look at him like, what the heck? And he says, you got it. Remember we talked about this? And so I don't know who got help the most at that conference, but I certainly had a good time. I certainly was engaged, and he's still around too, so hopefully that was something And so I like to do that for other people too, and try to be the somebody that can show you what's going on without being the lecturer about it. Then about 8 years later, I was back as the DCM and still didn't know what I was talking about. I went up to the mic. I was one of those people that probably was up at the mic passionate about things both times, but hopefully it was just on the discussion topics, not the agenda items, because, you know, I didn't really know what was going on. But I participated, enjoyed myself, and it was all pretty darn awesome. Then started getting active at area level, and last year was elected to be the delegate for Montana, and I'm just really excited about that. I had one of my first sponsors early on was very, very active in service. She was a delegate. I'm not even sure what panel she was, but her name is Robbie, and many of you from the whole region might know who she was. And she died about, it was 2008, yeah. And so things were a little bit struggly then, but I had service. You know, I had my service people. I was sponsoring people. And so I could survive that time of limbo without a strong sponsor. But at 10 years sober, about 5 years ago, I got a new sponsor. And she's not as active in sobriety, or not, she's very active in sobriety. She's not as active in service, general service, at the area level, but certainly at the group and district level and all of that stuff. The first thing she told me when I told her I was going to be the delegate was, well, you're going to have to keep working with your women. You're going to have to get more women. And so that's the other point that I like to talk about with this is that you know, yes, I'm the delegate, but I still have my 8 sponsees. I'm still getting badgered to get new ones and work with somebody new. So that's still, I think, important for me to remember that once I start moving down that triangle of service, that the top of the triangle is still the most important part of that. And that this is just, you know, this is cool stuff. This is responsibility. But the most important thing is still remembering that still suffering alcoholic. And all the things that we do in all of our service conferences and the politics stuff is to remember that those are the most important people. I think I'm in the conclusion part. 4 minutes? Oh, well, I'll still go into the conclusion part. But 15 years ago, when I went into treatment on my son's 8th birthday, I never imagined what a life was ahead. But getting relief from my alcoholism in any way possible took me to a hopeless place. Today, my relief comes from a higher power that is revealed by working the steps, working with a still suffering alcoholic, and with service to AA. In As Bill Sees It, on page 37, there's a part that talks about a full and thankful heart. And it happens to be the quote on this is on my sobriety date on March 25th. So I love reading it. I love it when it's my birthday. And I love reading that. I love that I have a good daily reflection. So it says, I try hold to fast to the truth that a full and thankful heart cannot entertain great conceits. When brimming with gratitude, one's heartbeat must... I can't read my own writing. That's because I went to PA school and now I write prescriptions, so my writing has gotten horrible. So I did that in sobriety. I forgot to tell you that. That's why I don't work as a pharmacist anymore, because I did something else. So whatever. I'm going to start over on this. I try to hold fast to the truth that a full and thankful heart cannot entertain great conceits. Period. When brimming with gratitude, one's heartbeat must surely result in love, the finest emotion that we can ever know. So you all have helped me find that finest emotion, and for that I am eternally grateful.